Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining Bladder and Bowel Issues in MS. Your host for today is Tiffany Jordan. Ms. Jordan, you may begin.
Hi, everyone. This is Tiffany. I'm with the National MS Society, and I actually work for the Southern California Nevada chapter. So thank you guys all for calling in. We have a very large group that called in today, more than we expected. So we're happy to know that this is a topic that is of interest to you guys. And I'm going to introduce to you Patricia Kennedy, who is our speaker today. Pat Kennedy has been working in the field of multiple sclerosis since 1987. Initially, she worked as a nurse practitioner in a large comprehensive MS center and now works for Can Do Multiple Sclerosis, formerly the Huga Center in Edwards, Colorado. She works there as a nurse educator for staff and community and program advisor for the organization. She sits in the Client Education Committee of the National MS Society. Pat is president of the board of the International Organization of MS Nurses. She is certified as a multiple sclerosis nurse. She's had the opportunity to speak about MS to people living with MS as well as professional audiences internationally and contributes to many publications and books. She is the editor of a book written by a multidisciplinary team of professionals who work as staff for Can Do MS. The book is called The Can Do Multiple Sclerosis Guide to Lifestyle Empowerment. I would now like to turn the time over to Pat Kennedy.
Thank you, Tiffany, and good evening, everyone. Goodness, there are so many of you on this call, so it just reaffirms for me how common the problems, dealing with problems with bladder and bowel function are when you have MS. We estimate somewhere around 85% of people living with MS at one time or another will experience difficulty in this area. So you're all on, so let's go ahead and get started, and we'll try to walk you through what's happening, what you can do about it, what you need to do next, and give you that kind of information. I have to talk with my hands, and that it's very difficult because I just would love to show you what a bladder looks like. But at any rate, we'll go ahead and try to describe it in our best words. So MS and bladder function, as I said, are common. The symptoms are sporadic, but even when they're sporadic, they interfere with your lifestyle because if you have that difficulty, you're always going to be wondering, am I going to have problems today? So it's very much a lifestyle changer. Bladder issues, however, can usually be managed in one way or another. It's not the same as perfect, perhaps, but it is manageable and people can get back into life and not have to worry so much about their bladder if they're getting the care that they need. And bladder symptoms, while they're aggravating and they're limiting and they're isolating, those are all the social issues. Those are the ones that are most important. But if bladder issues especially are allowed to get worse over time, it can lead to bigger problems within the urinary system. So it's very important both from a social aspect as well as a health aspect to make sure that you're talking about your bladder issues and your bowel issues, but your bladder issues with your doctor. So in MS, what causes bladder problems? And I think, honestly, last week I was with some people and one person just didn't even know that it was part of MS. So I'm sure most of you do, but just to say that the lesions, the MS plaques that you get in your brain and in your spinal cord will cause interruptions of the messages that go from the brain to the bladder and from the bladder back to the brain. And by the same token, it does that for the bowel as well. It's the lesions that occur in the spinal cord that seem to cause most of the problems, but the lesions that occur in the brain may actually have an impact on your ability to voluntarily control bladder and bowel functions. So lesions in both places can cause issues here. There is, in this particular symptom, a correlation between the amount of disability a person might experience and the presence of bladder and bowel issues. So if people are having more difficulty with walking, with spasticity, they might expect that their bladder issues are related to their MS, because those symptoms come from lesions in the spinal cord. So MS, when it causes a problem, can cause an empty bladder to empty often, but when it empties, it really empties and it's empty. If you can also have a bladder that empties only partially and it never quite empties out completely, which then causes other problems, which I'll go into. So how does the bladder work just before you had MS? And for those of you on the call that don't have MS, how does your bladder work? Well, envision your bladder as sort of a big balloon, and then at the bottom of the balloon is where you tied the knot. And the actual balloon is like the bladder muscle. It's called the detrusor muscle. But what's important to know is it's a muscle. It doesn't have a brain. So it's controlled by the nerves that come from the spinal cord and tell that bladder muscle what to do. That knot at the bottom through which you blew up your balloon, that would be the part of the bladder that actually comes to the outside, the urethra. And in that stem that comes from the bladder are two sphincters or valves. And those valves are responsible for helping you to keep urine in the bladder or to help you get urine to open it up and let urine come out. So when you think about how it works, you know, that's normally what happens. So when you have MS, and I told you that there are nerves that go from the bladder and from the sphincters to the spinal cord up to the brain. The brain processes that and then will send messages back down to tell the bladder, well, it's okay, you can go now, or not. So when you have lesions in the spinal column and the brain, those messages are getting interrupted. And so when that happens, then the bladder doesn't behave quite the way that you want it to. And so that's how they're all connected. And when we get to bowel, I'll explain that again for the bowel function. So with MS, you can have a bladder that is a bladder that does not fill or failure to fill. And what happens there is that the lesions in the brain and the spine may cause frequent messages up and down the spine, erroneous. They're not the normal message. And so they're giving the brain the message that the bladder has to empty. The brain sends back down the message that says, okay, go now. So that ability to really inhibit that or hold back on that urine sometimes is harder because the brain is saying you need to go, you need to go. And these are people who may go 3, 4, 5 times an hour at times. And so that, as you can imagine, impairs your lifestyle. And lesions may decrease your ability to control that urgency. So when you get that gotta go, you really need to get there quickly because that ability to hold it and inhibit it just isn't working. So what symptoms would you have if you were experiencing this kind of a bladder? Well, you would have frequency, as I stated. You would have urgency. Oh, I got to go, got to get there now. You might have some leaking on the way, not usually large amounts, but some leaking on the way. You might experience loss of sleep because if you're going frequently throughout the night, you're not going to be sleeping well. And you're not going to have that same freedom to be out and about in the community without worrying about where are the bathrooms. And I know many of you know that syndrome. In the grocery store, in the department store, wherever you are, you wonder, where is the restroom? So if you don't have that kind of bladder, what does the other bladder look like? Well, we call those the failure to empty bladders. And there are several causes that can cause these kinds of symptoms. One is, as I told you with that big balloon that is your bladder muscle, the nerves will be told to squeeze that muscle and push that urine out through the sphincters and out. Well, when there is some miscommunication between the messages to the bladder and to the sphincters, what may happen is the bladder muscle may squeeze to push the urine out, and maybe some urine will come out, and then the sphincters will get the message to close before the bladder is really empty. So a person will go, but they don't totally get all the urine out. Sometimes what will happen is that those sphincters or those valves will relax too much, and they will let urine out when you really weren't intending for urine to come out. And sometimes that sphincter will get a message that it needs to stay shut, and it will just do that. It will stay shut, and a person is not capable of emptying their bladder. So when we have a failure to empty bladder, there are three possibilities, but the most common is that bladder that is just not coordinated. So the muscle is squeezing, the sphincter opens but closes too quickly, or the muscle relaxes too quickly. So it's sort of, the word is dyssynergia, but they're just not working together well. So what symptoms does that bladder cause? Well, you'll have frequency. Just like the other one, you'll have urgency, and often with incontinence. There may be hesitancy, where you really have to go, you get into the bathroom, and you go, ah, but then you sit there or you stand there, and you're not able to get the urine to come out. That's called hesitancy. That's because that sphincter isn't opening to allow the urine to come out. You might not at the end feel that you're empty. You may think, okay, I'm done. Then you get up and wash your hands and start to walk out, and you go, oh, gosh, I have to go again, because you really didn't empty completely the first time. You might need to get up at night, just as with the other bladder. This bladder may cause you to get up at night as well. You may have leakage if that sphincter can't stay shut on its own. You may have leakage of urine during the day. And from a health perspective, if you're keeping urine in your bladder all the time, it's a great breeding ground for bacteria. And so you'll be at bigger risk for having urinary tract infections. So this is why it's so important, the social reasons, the medical reasons. It's really important to have your bladder looked into. So if you have some of those symptoms, what should you be doing? Well, the first thing is you need to talk to your provider. And you can talk to your family practice provider, you can talk to your internist, or you can talk to your neurologist and let them know the kinds of symptoms you're experiencing. Ideally, if your if your provider has an ultrasound machine in their office, they would be able to measure your bladder after you have been to the bathroom to see if you are retaining any urine in your bladder. Not every office has these. That's the ideal, of course, but not every office has these. So they're going to be thinking, if I had one of those, that's what I'd be doing. If they don't have one, they may do something else, which I'll explain in a minute. They may, depending on your symptoms and depending on how long you've had them or if you've had a lot of infections, they may refer you directly to a urologist to have that bladder evaluated. Sometimes you could get a referral to a pelvic floor physical therapist. These are physical therapists who have specialized in their training, and they're able to work with the pelvic floor muscle to give you some added control. They might make some suggestions about some lifestyle changes, which I'll go over with you, or they might prescribe a medication which might calm the bladder muscle. So, you know, we like to start simple and then work up the ladder from there. So if you started with lifestyle changes, what kinds of things might you do? Well, I think many of you who have frequency and have to go all the time naturally would say, well, if I don't drink, I won't have to go as often. And so people find themselves not drinking very much throughout the day. And that makes absolute sense at one level, but the problem is when you don't drink very much, several things happen. And one of them is the urine gets stronger and more concentrated, and that's an irritation to the bladder lining. Therefore, it will actually make the urge to go stronger. So sometimes it comes back to bite you. So it isn't a really good thing to cut way back on your fluids, although you can certainly manage your fluids. So if you're going to a movie and you know you're going to be sitting for 2 hours, you don't want to be drinking a big Coke before the movie or at home before you go, or a cup of coffee. You don't want to do that because then you know you're going to have to get up and leave the movie to go. So you can manage your fluids, hold back at some times and then drink more later when you know that you're going to be closer to the bathroom. Remember that alcohol can irritate the lining of the bladder. So if you've ever had a beer in your life, you know that you have to go to the bathroom a lot more. And so if you have bladder issues, you might want to kind of think about that before having that beer. If you use artificial sweetener in some of your beverages, like aspartame, it may also contribute to irritation of the bladder. So it's something that some people are pretty sensitive to, and it's just something for you to know about. Some foods can affect people's bladders, chocolate, tomatoes, there's a list, but it's really sporadic and only some people are affected. So, you know, you can kind of do a little test on your own to see if you notice that some things seem to increase your frequency. And one thing you can do is double voiding, which means that when you have that sensation that you haven't quite emptied and then you have to go back in, don't even go through all that. Go the first time and then either stand up if you're a lady or just move away if you're a gentleman. Then come back before you get all dressed again. Come back, sit back down, stand up again, and try to go some more. It's like rebooting your computer. So when you're sitting the first time, your brain is telling your bladder to go. Then it closes too soon, you stand up, and then you sit back down again, and now the brain again gets the message, oh, it's time to go. And so it will squeeze the bladder again, and you'll empty some more urine. And if you can manage emptying your bladder with these measures, that's a good thing, without adding anything more. But in case that isn't working for you, then there are other measures that the urologist or even your family doctor or your neurologist, they might suggest that you take medications to help relax the bladder wall. We can do that and not do the testing where we look and see if you're emptying well, but we're only going to do it for a time. And if it isn't taking care of your symptoms, it's probably then going to turn into a referral to a urologist or to a neurourologist. But we might try without doing that testing first, because if it's pure and simple that this is an overactive bladder, we can manage that. But if it isn't pure and simple, then you're going to need the referral. But there are a number of drugs out there that are available for helping to decrease the frequency of urination, and Ditropan XL and Oxybutynin, Detrol LA, Oxytrol, Sanctura, Vesicare, Toviaz, and Merbitric is the newest one. The only hitch to using these medications, if you really haven't measured the bladder output, is that if you relax that bladder wall, if you allow that bladder wall to relax too much, it will then hold more urine. And if you're not emptying it well, then you're stretching out that bladder. So that's not necessarily a good thing. So this is why if you try a couple things and they're not working well, this is why you'll end up with a referral to a urologist. So if you do, what would a urologist do? Well, first thing, they're going to sit and take a really good urology history and ask all kinds of questions. They may ask you ahead of time to keep a bladder diary so they have some idea of what your history looks like. How often do you go after eating, after drinking? How much do you drink? Those kinds of questions. They're going to want to do a pelvic examination for the women, and for the men, they'll want to do a prostate exam, because in both cases, everything isn't always MS. And so there could be some pelvic abnormalities that could be adding to this problem or causing this problem. And for a male, it could be a prostate issue and not an MS issue at all. So that examination will be part of the urology evaluation. They will do the ultrasound measurement, and so they'll have you go into a container, measure how much you've been able to go, and then they're going to do an ultrasound to see how much is left in the bladder. Most bladders empty out pretty well without MS, but with MS, and if you're holding some, there can be quite large amounts that are left in the bladder. So we really need to know that as part of knowing what to do in a treatment sense. Sometimes they'll want to look inside the bladder, and they'll do that through a cystoscopy, a long, very skinny tube with a light on the end that allows them to look in and see what the inside of the bladder looks like. Is there are there stones in there? Is there irritation? Is there a cancer? All kinds of things that might contribute to the problems you're having. They might suggest urodynamic studies, which are very complicated, involved studies, but what they do, the studies look at how well the bladder wall contracts or doesn't contract, how well the sphincter opens or stays open or closes too quickly. They're going to look at all those functions so they can really narrow it down to what is going on with this person's bladder and which part of the nervous system is affecting it and what can we now do to help make it better. So this is what's going to happen if you go to a urologist. So if the testing reveals that indeed you are holding a lot of urine in your bladder, what it might be recommended would be that you do or learn to do intermittent catheterization. And this is the use of a slender catheter that goes, you insert yourself, goes up through the urethra into the bladder, and empties the urine that is present in the bladder out. It's a bit like siphoning gas out of your car as a good example of what you're actually doing. Then you take the tube out, it gets washed or thrown away, and then you'll do this anywhere from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day, whatever your needs are. But that allows that sphincter that isn't letting all the urine out, it allows you to bypass that, get that urine out of the bladder, so it decreases the risk of infections and it decreases the risk of pressures in the bladder that might ultimately affect your kidneys. So that might be a recommendation, and while you sit there and say, oh, I don't ever want to do that, you actually might need to, and you'll find it to be a great help in your lifestyle because it empties the bladder and you don't have to go so often. Another thing that might be suggested by the urologist is the use of something that is relatively new, and that's the use of Botox injections into the bladder. And you know that if you get Botox at your doctor for wrinkles in your face, what the Botox is doing is relaxing the muscles that are causing that indentation or that wrinkle in your face. Well, in your bladder, injections of Botox, and usually they do a number of injections all over the inside of that bladder muscle. So little tiny areas of bladder muscle are getting Botox and are made to relax by the medication. And so the whole bladder doesn't relax, but parts of it do. So it decreases that frequency. But a person who gets Botox sometimes may need to know how to do intermittent catheterization because it'll be harder without that full muscle contraction because of the relaxation. It will be harder to empty the bladder. So you might need to learn how to do intermittent catheterization to completely empty the bladder. But I have had patients that have had this procedure done and have catheterized, and it has given them freedom that they never hadn't experienced for quite a while. So it is an option, and it's something that you can talk about with your provider, with your doctor, and if you go to the urologist, you can ask them if it's appropriate for you. I mentioned that you might be referred to a physical therapist who does bladder floor training. I'm sorry, pelvic floor training. This would be for a person who is having more of the bladder frequency and urgency, but is emptying fairly well. And what you learn to do is, ladies will remember Kegel exercises, but we all do them wrong. And what they'll work with you on is isolating exactly the muscles it takes to really squeeze to catch that sphincter and keep it closed. And what this kind of these exercises will do is allow you time to get to the bathroom, to be able to, you know, get to the gas station, those kinds of things, so that you're not caught midstream, as it were. So pelvic training can work for some people. Take some patience, take some time to learn. If one of you tells your provider, you know, I'd really just like to take a pill and I don't want to mess with all this stuff, what does that mean? Well, medications for bladder urgency and frequency do help to relax the bladder muscle. So they're a good thing. And in many people, they can manage their bladder function with medication. They do have side effects. And so for those of you who have taken the bladder medications, you know they can cause dry mouth and they can cause sometimes fuzzy thinking and they can make you feel more tired. And so people might not want to take these medications. And so maybe that's not an option for you. If you don't empty your bladder well, however, that's going to allow that urine to sit in there and then your risk for infection and kidney problems comes. So this is why taking a pill is not a good thing, because that'll just keep increasing the amount of urine that your bladder holds on to and thereby increasing your infection rate and also increasing the pressure in the bladder, which can affect the kidneys. And providers, any of us, we can't tell by just taking your history without really doing some investigation exactly which kind of bladder you have. We have suspicions. If you have infections, you're probably retaining. If you're going five times an hour, it's probably the overactive bladder. But we don't know that. And so we sometimes have to explore. So it's why just handing you a pill is not necessarily the answer. So that's what I'm going to share with you about bladder function, but we'll take some questions at the end. But I did want to spend a few minutes talking to you about bowel function. This is a topic that doesn't get talked about very often, and I think probably many of you, because the incidence of this is as high as it is for bladder problems. The same nerve patterns that work the bladder also work the bowel. And so usually if one is affected, the other one might be affected. And what those nerve abnormalities in the spine and the brain can do is cause constipation, is the main complaint that people have. And constipation is defined as a hard stool that is difficult to pass. So a person without MS normally might go on a daily basis, maybe a couple times a day, or maybe every 3 days. And that's all of those are in the normal range. And it's whatever your body's pattern is that is normal. But if you have MS, that may slow down, because those messages down the spinal cord and out to the colon to help your colon empty the stool, the waste that's in the colon, may be slowed, and they can be slowed from the medications that you take, from inactivity when you're not as up and about as you used to be. It could be impaired by inattention to signals. In other words, the messages may be very weak, and getting out to the bowel, you may not sense that your bowel is filling, and so you don't empty it because you don't know that you need to. Other causes that cause problems with bowels are there can be an impaired motility, so the actual stool in your bowel just may move more slowly, and the muscles that help it move may be slower, and so that holds on to the stool longer. So when you think about normal function of the bowel, most of us don't actually, do we think about that often? But what happens is that the waste that comes out of your stomach and gets into the small intestine and then into the large intestine and then into the colon, many things happen. Nutrients are taken out, and it just moves along, and it goes at your body's speed. When it goes more slowly, the other thing that it happens in the bowel is that it takes out the fluid, because your body recycles that. That's just part of how our bodies work. So the slower that things move through the bowel, then the more water gets taken out. And the more water that gets taken out makes a stool that gets down to the end, to the end of the colon, that is very hard. And when it doesn't move and it sits there, then it gets very hard and very large and very difficult to pass. So when you have that slowed motility, you're going to have difficulty with constipation and that hard to pass stool. So these are some of the reasons why you may experience problems in this area. I mean, there are people without MS who are constipated, so it isn't necessarily just an MS problem, but we certainly do see a lot of it. Now, do we see much diarrhea? And actually, MS itself doesn't so much cause diarrhea, but what it does, what it can do, is if you don't have good control over those sphincters or valves that keep the stool in or let the stool out, just like the bladder, if you don't have good control over those sphincters, when you have diarrhea that comes racing through like a freight train, those sphincters aren't going to be able to hold on to it. And so you'll have difficulty with involuntary stools with diarrhea. The second thing that can happen with diarrhea is if you get constipated enough and you have hard stool that's sitting in your lower colon and you're not able to pass it, stool that is coming down the colon from above is looser, it's got more water still, and it backs up behind that hard stool and then it leaks around it. And so people may have diarrhea who are actually fairly constipated, and it's all that loose stool coming down that is actually leaking around. So if you have that diarrhea, you need to look into that for either reason. You know, do you have an illness with diarrhea, or are you constipated, and is there hard stool in there? The other problem, though, that we do see is what we call involuntary bowel or lack of control of bowel movements. And again, this happens because of several reasons. One is that you don't feel that stool that you need to go, and consequently it's sitting there and your body says, well, it's there, so I'm going to make it empty. And so without any ability of yours to control that, it will do that. And it's also that problem with the valves or the sphincters, where if they're just not strong enough to hold on to that stool, because of movement of the bowel, is just going to push on through. So people will experience that involuntary bowel. So how can you improve bowel function? Well, there are just a few things we'll talk about here. Moving your body more, however that is, will help, because that movement and being upright will help gravity to pull stool down, help with a little bit of muscle strengthening to be able to control some of those bowel movements. So moving your body more is always a good idea. Eating regularly throughout the day and eating more high-fiber foods. I know you've heard that before, and you have to eat so much fiber, but it really is helpful. People sometimes, though, don't take the time to prepare three meals a day or little mini meals throughout the day. So they're not consistently putting waste into their gut. Therefore, the gut just gets all kind of spastic about it, and they doesn't know what to do with it. So that's constipation can occur because of that. And fluids, I mentioned before, if you decrease your fluids because your bladder's not working well, then your stool's going to be drier, and then you're going to have a problem with that. So one of the ways you can manage this is by establishing a bowel program. And basically, it's training your bowel to function on a more normal basis for you. And so you need to figure out what kind of a schedule do you want? Do you want to aim for what you were before every day, every 2 days, every 3 days? That's usually what's recommended. What was your pattern? And then you aim for that again. Choose a time of day when you can devote, let's say, 15, 20 minutes to that time of day, but be consistent about it, because you don't want to, well, morning one day and afternoon another. You want to make sure it's always at the same time of the day. Sit on the toilet on schedule, even if you don't have a sense that you need to. Sometimes just the act of sitting on the toilet sends messages to the bowel that this is a time that we need to empty, and it will do that. It's not always that easy, but it can work. But I don't want you to sit on the toilet more than 15 minutes, because then you're going to be straining and causing other problems, such as putting pressure on hemorrhoids and things like that. So if that's not working, you want to think about, you know, if your stool is hard and just not coming out, you may want to add something like a bulk agent and increase the amount of water and fiber in your diet. I mentioned that. And the bulk agents are things like Metamucil and Benefiber and psyllium products. There are many of them out there on the market. What they do is, and it doesn't get absorbed in your body, but it just stays in your colon, in your bowel, and it helps to hold on to that water that the body would otherwise take out. And so it tends to make the stool softer, moister, and easier to pass. So you want to use it on a regular basis, not as a one-time treatment for constipation, but as a sort of a daily routine. You don't want to take those products, however, if you're not drinking enough water. So you need to have at least 4 glasses of water a day to be able to use those products. Otherwise, they're not going to have anything to hold on to, and they'll sort of work a little bit like cement. So you want to make sure that you're getting the extra fluid. You may want to get the stool started on your bowel program, use something like glycerin suppositories that you can insert prior to that bowel time that you're having, or you can use something like digital stimulation. Using a gloved finger into the rectal area will also stimulate the stool to come out. Use your diet. You can certainly use things like prunes and oatmeal and fruit and whole grains. You can even mix all those things up together into a paste or into a, you know, there are lots of funny names for these, but you can come up with your own recipe. And sometimes that's what people need. You know, a little prunes every day may do it for them. So experiment. See what works for you. Allow a few weeks for the program to work well. Don't be too impatient. Don't say, oh, it's not working. But if it's not successful, then you need to talk to your provider about, what else do I need? You know, maybe there's a problem and you'll need to see a gastroenterologist. Maybe it's not MS at all, or it's a bigger problem. So, again, make sure you let your provider know. So there you go. That's what I have to share with you tonight. But I would love to invite questions from the audience about either bladder function or bowel function. So I think Matthew is still there. And Matthew, if you had some questions on the line, I'd be happy to take them.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key now. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key now. Our first question comes from James. James, go ahead.
Good evening. James, are you there?
Our next question comes from Michelle. Michelle, go ahead.
Hi, Michelle.
Our next question comes from Peter. Peter, go ahead. Our next question comes from Lindsay. Lindsay, go ahead.
Yes. Is this me?
Lindsay?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
I've been wearing a catheter 24/7, a full catheter.
Yes.
We're going to be going on vacation, and therefore, I'm not going to be able to wear it all the time. What should I expect?
I have to ask a couple things. Why wouldn't you be able to wear it all the time? Okay, that's right. She's muted. If you go on vacation and you have an indwelling catheter, you can take your vacation with your indwelling catheter in a leg bag. And you do the same thing on vacation that you do at home. And you need to empty the leg bag when it's necessary and, you know, all the same measures that you use. If you've been using a Foley catheter or an indwelling catheter for a while and you were to take it out, you probably would experience loss of urine or inability to empty your bladder, whichever problem you have. And I wouldn't be able to answer that question for you. But I suspect it, if you're wearing an indwelling catheter, it's probably a good idea to keep it indwelling and then figure out how you can manage with the leg bag while you're on vacation. Many, many people do that, and so I think you can probably figure something out. Next.
Our next question comes from Marcy. Marcy, go ahead.
Marcy?
I think she had some difficulties. I was hearing a line. Our next question comes from Charlotte. Charlotte, go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. I have a question. I'm calling about the urinary tract. I get urinary tract infections sometimes three times and a week in between without.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I get quite a bit. And then, of course, the medicine I take for it does help it. It's antibiotic. It does help it go away, but then it will come back in a week. And I've been told that that could be caused from stress. Is that true?
It's caused by bacteria, not stress. So what I would just suggest to you is that I'm hoping that if you're having urinary tract infections that often, you're a candidate to see a urologist. It could be that if they're coming back, it could be that the antibiotic isn't quite taking care of the bacteria that are in your bladder. And it may be that you need to have that looked at. Do you have bladder stones? Is there some sort of a localized place of infection in your bladder? And are you on the right antibiotic? So those are all questions that you really deserve to have answered, and I would look into that further and make sure. I think a urologist is probably in your future.
Our next question comes from Clara. Clara, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Clara.
I have both kinds of you described the urinary problems.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I sit down and I feel that I have to go and nothing happens.
Right.
But I was to a urologist a number of years ago, and he did a complete check of my bladder and found that it was healthy looking and everything, but he had determined it was urge incontinence. But my main problem is at night getting up three and four times. That really is sleep disturbing.
Yes, it is. And it, of course, you got fatigue anyway, don't you? And then you add that to it, it just doesn't help at all. You can have both kinds of bladders, not at the same time. But often people start off with the urge incontinence, which is the one where you go frequently but you empty well. But in time, as MS progresses, your bladder may turn into the other kind of bladder where you get the hesitancy, you can't get those sphincters to open, and you can't get the urine out. So it could be that your nighttime urination is due to the fact that that bladder is just never empty. And so, you know, at night when you lie down in bed, all the fluid that you collect in your body, like in your ankles and legs and things like that, it all gets shuttled back up to the kidneys, and the kidneys begin to put it out. And if you went to bed with a half full bladder, it doesn't take long before you're going to have to go again and again and again. So even though you've been to the urologist once, I would make another visit. And whether it's the same one or a different one doesn't matter, but somebody needs to look and see what is going on, and then help you figure out what you need to do at that point. So good question.
Our next question comes from Karen. Karen, go ahead.
Hi. My question is about bowel, although I do have bladder problems too.
they do run in pairs, yes.
Yes, they do. I used to take a lot of fiber, but
yes.
Then I developed really serious and painful gas, which I think is also related to the way my bowel works. And so I had to sign off the fiber. I now take Senna. I am under the care of a gastroenterologist, and the Senna works. I go every day, usually 3 or 4 times, but it's confined to the morning. So, you know, say by 10:30 in the morning or 10, I'm free and everything is gone and everything is okay. But I'm wondering what alternatives, what you think about Senna, and what alternatives you see for people that can't do the fiber thing.
Well, you ask another really good question. You've done a lot of things right. You started off using fiber, which is a pretty natural way to manage it, but you're absolutely right. If you take in enough fiber, it is gassy, and some people aren't able to tolerate it, and in other cases, your gut sort of says, oh, ho-hum, I'm so tired of this fiber, and I'm not going to work well for you. But then you did the next thing right, and that was you saw the gastroenterologist, and so you found out that there isn't something else going on, so that's a good thing. And so they have suggested that you take Senna, which is a natural product, but it is a pretty, it's a good laxative. And, you know, it's working for you in the pattern that you have established for yourself. And I don't know that I'd want to change it. But if you can't tolerate fiber, again, using suppositories can help. Sometimes Miralax, but you'd want to talk to your provider about that. So there are other things out there, but, you know, it sounds to me like you have a pretty good plan going. So something about if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you've done all the right things, and it's working for you in your lifestyle, which is what it's all about. So unless it stops working, then you need to go back to the drawing board and ask your gastroenterologist what the next step is. But for now, I think I congratulate you. You're doing pretty well.
Our next question comes from Mona. Mona, go ahead.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
My question involves exercise and my bladder. I feel like when I walk, I have to go to the bathroom, and so it limits my ability to exercise by, like, walking as a form of exercise.
Uh-huh.
I know when I go like 4 miles per hour, my bladder goes haywire, and it's really frustrating.
I'll bet it is. Well, of course, as I said, listening to symptoms, I can't tell you what is exactly causing this. I can tell you, though, that if you're walking, okay, you're upright, you're using your muscles, gravity, is pulling down. So if you have a bladder that wants to go frequently, everything's working to make it want to go frequently when you're walking. So we don't want you to give up the walking. So I really would encourage you to talk to your doctor, whichever doctor you want to talk to, about this problem and see if any of and get the rest of your history, first of all. But if everything being equal and you're emptying well, see if one of the medications I suggested would at least, for the time when you want to be out exercising, if you kind of time your medication around that, if that wouldn't give you some relief while you're trying to walk. Because I don't want you to give up walking, but on the other hand, how awkward that must be. So have that talk with your provider. That's one of the things I really can't encourage all of you to do enough.
Our next question comes from Peggy. Peggy, go ahead.
Yes, I have both bladder and bowel problems. I have no control at all. I wear Depends all the time, and my bowel probably gives me the most problem because I also have microscopic colitis. So I take fiber every day with a product called Relive, and I will maybe get so I can't go, and I'll have a hard stool, but if I empty that, then I get pains, and then I know that it's going into diarrhea, and I'll have that maybe for a few hours. Sometimes it's 3 or 4 times a week. Sometimes I'll go, a couple of weeks and not have any, and then the pattern kind of starts all over again.
Well, that's a difficult situation. I think, without knowing the whole history, this is a complicated picture. This is not the usual picture. When you said the word colitis, that immediately kind of flips this into a slightly different situation. And this is where I really do depend on the help from our gastroenterologists. And, I say urologists and I say gastroenterologists. It's always good if you can find one of those specialists who actually has some experience dealing with people with MS. Because when you have sort of a colitis picture with diarrhea and constipation mixed, then there's also with MS, then you have the neurologic problem in on top of that. So it takes some special treatment and it's a little trial and error at times. And so I can't answer your question because I just don't have enough information. But I do know that this is, if you were my patient and I was suggesting what to do, I would have you see a gastroenterologist because it feels to me as if you're trying your best, but it isn't working, so let's go find what might work better for you.
Our next question comes from John. John, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I have both bladder and bowel problems, but
uh-huh.
I'm kind of suspecting my bowel problems might not be MS because I have very loose bowels and I take probiotics for that, and it manages it a little bit, but not perfectly. Now, I noticed in the drug comment, the drug
mm-hmm.
section, you hadn't listed Flomax, which is for people like myself. I do take that for emptying the bladder because my bladder does not empty well.
Right.
And I was wondering why that wasn't listed on your...
Because I forgot. So you caught me. If a person has, and it's not just men, by the way, this is men and women. If you have a sphincter that is not opening, then Flomax is a drug that... It was invented, actually, for men with prostate problems, and it allows some relaxation of the sphincter so that it allows that sphincter to stay open longer to let more urine out. Well, lo and behold, we found that it isn't just for men with prostate problems, and there are some others too. Cardura is another one. Hytrin is another one. And they are of some benefit for helping that sphincter to stay open longer, allowing more urine to get out. So they're good medications. And, you know, sometimes if you get a prescription for that medication and take it to the pharmacy, the pharmacist will say, well, this is for men. And if you're a woman, you're going to go, but it's for me too, because it is helpful and, you know, it's worth a try. So thanks for catching that.
Matthew, I'm going to cut, this is Tiffany, I'm going to cut into the call now because we're over time. So I want to thank you so much, Pat, for this wonderful teleconference. You've done such a great job. And if everybody could stay on the line, I know there's some follow-up polls that Matthew will run. And I want to let Pat, if you have something else you want to finish off with, go ahead. If not, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome, and I hope all of you found at least a couple pearls tonight that you'll be able to use and that you found it to be helpful. So thank you, Tiffany, for asking, and it's 10:30 on the East Coast, so I bid you good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to start our first of three polling questions. Our first polling question is, I am aware of normal bowel and bladder function without MS. Please press 1 for yes, 2 for somewhat, 3 for no, and 4 for not sure. Polling has closed for this question. One moment while I tell the results and prepare for the next question. Our second polling question is, I have a greater understanding of what dysfunction can occur related to MS. Please press 1 for yes, 2 for somewhat, 3 for no, and 4 for not sure. Polling is closed for this question. One moment while I tally the results. Our third and final polling question for tonight is, I am aware of ways to explore these issues with my healthcare provider for solutions. Press 1 for yes, 2 for somewhat, 3 for no, and 4 for not sure. Polling is closed for this question. One moment while I tell you the results. Polling has now ended. Ms. Jordan, would you like to have some closing remarks?
No, that's it. Thank you guys so much for calling in.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference has now concluded. You may now disconnect.